called it, quote, his jam patch.
Jam patch?
I'm the fucking hippo guy.
Dave, okay.
My name's Gary.
My name's Gary.
Wait. Is it for fun?
And this is not going to become the Tickling Podcast.
Okay.
This is like anarchy.
On a five-part confession.
My room's a place.
Now hit him with the puppy.
You both present sick arguments.
No sleep till hippo.
No sleep till hippo.
Action, pardon.
Hi, Gary.
No.
Nicely done, my friend.
No. No.
The joy on some of your faces shouting that is... Okay.
You're listening to The Dollop!
This is a bilingual American history podcast. Once a week, I read a story in two different languages to my friend. American history... Gareth Reynolds.
Who has no idea de la story is about.
We did it!
Barely, by this.
We fucking did it.
They said we couldn't. They said we couldn't.
We're brought to you in part by Policy Genius. Look, if someone relies on you for financial support, whether it's a child or an aging parent or even a business partner, you need life insurance. Life insurance, it gives you peace of mind. So if something happens to you, your loved ones, they're going to have a financial cushion to pay for things like rent, mortgage, loans, education, just everything, daily expenses. And usually life insurance gets more expensive as you age. So it start a policy soon rather than, you know, waiting on it. So look, head over to policygenius.com and answer a few questions about yourself. And in just a few minutes, you can work out how much life insurance coverage you need. And then you compare personalized quotes to find your best price. You could save 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. And they work for you. So Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies. So you can trust them to offer unbiased help and advocate for you at every step until you're covered. They don't add on extra fees. They don't sell your info to third parties. So head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. We are brought to you in part by Zen Business. Look, a lot of people right now, the great resignation is on. They're like, they're out of their jobs. They're like, I don't want to do this anymore. I want more control over my life. I want a better life. I don't want a boss man telling me what to do. And so a lot of people are starting their own business. Zen Business is very, very helpful. They got an all-in-one platform. It guides you as a new entrepreneur through all the stuff you have to go through to get it going, an LLC or whatever you're going to set up. Got a super easy pricing structure. Starts as low as $49. And then look, they're not going to hit you with a bunch of hidden fees. It's all very straightforward. What they say is what it is. They have a very fast and simple business formation for LLC and other business structures. Worry-free compliance and annual filings. So you can stay in good standing with the state. You can secure an employee ID number so you can open a bank account, hire employees, protect your personal, all that stuff. I wish I had Zen Business when I started my business. It would have freed up all that time I spent on paperwork and all that stuff so I could have just focused on the business. So look, Zen Business has helped hundreds of thousands of people get their business off the ground by guiding them every step of the way and making it easier to launch a successful business. Get started today for as low as $49 at zenbusiness.com/dollop. That's zenbusiness.com/dollop.
1828!
Year of our Lord, Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ grew up in Nashville.
The Hudson Bay Company was the...
That can't be specific. That's just delayed enthusiasm.
People... I mean, you never know when you
it's
come to a new town.
The best one!
It's my favorite Bay Company.
The only Bay Company I think about.
The Hudson Bay Company built the first lumber mill in the Pacific Northwest at Fort Vancouver.
Sure, it's a great, yeah.
The California Gold Rush in 1848 led to more mills being built along Puget Sound. Puget. I said it right.
Puget.
And if I buy that.
You did say I said it right in there real early.
No, I thought she said I said it right. She was lying.
Okay. She wasn't lying.
She lied to me. She told me how to... I came here and I was like, how do you say it? And she said, Puget. You guys all fucking saw it.
You know.
You all saw it!
Dave!
Puget Sound, whatever that is. By the mid-1850s, there were over two dozen mills in the area. As time went on, technical advances like the steam logging machine...
Oh, man, remember when you couldn't log with steam? Woo, different time.
Meant fewer men were working. This also meant it took less skill to move logs, so workers' wages went down.
Sure.
America.
Oh, okay. Those help me, those charts you do.
To keep the mills running efficiently, lumber companies established mill towns. Sure. Mm-hmm. These towns were basically free from the interference of the government.
Okay, well, that's going to be an issue.
Competitors?
That'll be an issue
and,
in this.
And labor organizers.
Uh-huh. Okay. Sorry. So authority?
Competitors and workers getting all, I want food.
Oh. Very simple.
So the owners had full control. Lumberjacks had to pay to sleep in the barracks. They would try to cram in as many men as they could. One logger described the bunkhouses as, quote, an architectural abortion.
Oh, my God.
That's just so you guys know, that's bad. That's bad.
Wow.
Loggers had to live in shitty housing, eating rotting food, exposed to diseases, and with a lack of sanitation.
Well, to be fair, though, this was the 1800s, right? This is pretty much... generally,
I think it was worse than
it
that.
It sounds, yeah, I guess if you're eating rotting food, sure.
I mean, people in the 1800s are like, what do you got that's not healthy and falling apart?
Yeah. What's not edible in the 1800s?
What smells horrible? Some camps would put the latrine between the kitchen and the barracks,
that's
causing
smart.
Tons of gastrointestinal problems.
That's smart.
The smell would sometimes be so bad, lumberjacks would leave their barracks and go sleep in the forest.
Where we all thought they slept before this. Let's be honest.
They would also all come in and hang up their socks at the end of the day. In the barracks, and there's no breeze.
Oh, God. I was definitely on the Santa wavelength.
And then forest elves would come and put...
obviously. Kohler gifts. Yes, Kohler gifts based on their day of lumber work.
Lumberjack socks.
I'm not an idiot. I know how this works.
There were no workplace standards. Companies provided the least they could. Logging was also seasonal, so they were always laid off. There were no mattresses in the barracks.
What?
Just hay, and then they had their own blanket they brought around, which was apparently the perfect environment for fleas.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay. So this is like the human pound.
One 11-year-old logger...
Oh, boy, what? No.
Time to go to work.
Yeah. Yep.
Described his first night's sleep in the barracks.
Oh, he's 11.
Yep. Quote, not too good.
Okay, interesting.
The fleas, having found their way out, were having a grand time. Jumping around and feeding on brand new tenter's skin.
Okay, they definitely, I mean, this is definitely written a little heavy from the flea POV. Frolicking among skin particles.
Sleep came after my little friends had been fed and crawled back under the bottom blanket again.
This is the cartoon era.
I So I kill myself if that happened. Like, I fucking kill myself. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm 11. Fuck this shit. This is...
I had a good run.
Yeah, I mean... I mean, you're just basically a flea-feeding bag. Yeah. Just waiting for them to... Come on, guys, I gotta go to sleep.
No. Yeah. No, yeah, you're Earth and the fleas are us. You're just like, ah!
People are thinking about that right now.
Yeah. Logger George Davidson's underwear was, quote, so full of vermin he had to throw them out and sleep outside.
What in God's name? He had to throw... Why sleep out... I got questions. He got rid of the problem. Why sleep outside?
Because I think there's so many fleas that if you don't have underwear on, it's...
Oh, that's what's weird, huh? Walking around without underwear?
No, the fleas are going into your fucking junk and butthole and whatever.
All right, I'm outside. I'm with it. Sold. Outside we go, bottomless. Step out like Porky Pig. Just a bunch of guys looking like they're in little 90s. Whew, those fleas are brutal, huh? Well, let's go sleep in the trees.
How old are you, 9?
Yeah, this is Terry. He's 9.
So the workers demanded better living conditions, but the logging companies said no.
Sure.
They said they couldn't afford it.
No, of course not.
Illness was common because of the food conditions, and if a flu or cold hit, it spread quickly through the packed bunkhouses. VD was also spread as loggers would have sex with each other.
Okay. Okay, little VD log sex, huh? All right. Testing well in Seattle. Noted. Woo! Meow! VD logger sex with fleas? Party of me, thank you. Yes.
Is that a pine tree? You need me to take that down?
Timber!
I'm gonna fuck you like a lumberjack fucks a lumberjack. I would pay so much money to watch a lumberjack fuck a lumberjack. I just...
How much money would you pay to just go into like a time like bubble and just be able to go in here without fleas getting us and just watch? Just watch. Be like, that kid's 11, dude. He is 11.
That guy's fucking that guy over there.
That guy's fucking. I watch that guy fuck that kid. That kid's 11. Look at all those dudes without underwear. How you doing?
Hi.
Hey. Help us or kill us. Either will do.
There weren't any bathing facilities at all, so men were just caked with dirt. That's the same now.
Yeah, I don't know if that makes the logger VD sex hot anymore. Showerless added in the mix.
Timber mill workers lived a bit better. They lived in company housing designed to generate profits. The ratios were 30 men per toilet and one small water pipe.
Well, thank God they're not eating.
I just think about what if everyone has, like, there's a gastrointestinal thing going around and everyone's just like, well, like, you can't.
No, you want to get, it's like, no, yeah, it's like chicken pox. You're like, I just want to get it out of the way.
And you can't because Barry's just been fucking sitting on there for a while. Oh. And someone's like, don't shit near the water pipe. That's a classic old lumberjack phrase. Don't shit near the water pipe.
No, they turned it into a song.
Both millworkers and lumberjacks had many, many injuries. Cables and machines would break, sending deadly parts whipping around. Flying logs would crush heads. The state of Washington started collecting data on injuries in 1912. Anywhere between 124 and 269 workers were dying each year. In the first 5 months of 1914, there were 4,928 accidents or deaths.
Jesus.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Get it done. You go, woo, logging. There was no safety net in America, so if you were injured, you're just fucked, and then you're just poor forever. Right. Like, you'd sit on the side of the road, you're like, I don't have legs. And then people throw you a pine cone or whatever happens up here.
What a scenario you just painted of a probable existence. Well, I got a pine cone at least. Oh, no.
The timber industry, besides shingle workers, were not organized. Sorry, shingle weavers.
So, yeah, I was going to say. They weave them, Dave. It's a different department.
So shingle weavers, they make shingles.
Obviously.
They used unprotected saws to turn stumps into wooden shingles. So it's a big fucking stump. And then they're cranking out shingles out of it.
Sure.
So they were known for their missing fingers.
Oh, great. What a great...
It was said you could tell who was working their first day as a shingle weaver because he had 10 fingers.
Oh. How'd you know? Look at your hands. Your beautiful hands.
How many days have you been working here?
Oh.
I'm holding them all up.
Oh.
The wood dust caused premature deaths in what they referred to as wood asthma.
God, asthma old. We didn't know existed.
Most shingle companies refused to put blowers in to alleviate the conditions of
sure.
all the fucking dust in there.
They'd get clogged with fleas anyway.
Yeah. In 1907, timber workers started reaching out to the Industrial Workers of the World, or IWW, also known as the Wobblies.
Mm-hmm.
They're called the Wobblies.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows why they were called the Wobblies.
Okay.
The union saw no reason to differentiate in regards to skill, unlike the AFL. A worker was a worker, and they all deserved a living wage and decent working conditions.
Lunacy.
The Wobblies told lumberjacks they deserved a better working environment, but the IWW was considered very radical, even by other unions. Short term, they wanted bettering the lives of workers. The long term was to end capitalism.
Oh, my God. Oh, you fucking... You radicals.
I would also say, let it play out before you judge it. There's sometimes a darkness before the light, okay? And I think we got a good feeling.
Lumberjacks like Tom Scribner came around to the Wobblies after almost dying a few times. Once a log rolled over his chest and ripped open his sides.
Oh, my God. Well, so...
I mean, I'm assuming that he kind of popped. Because if a log rolls over you, it's not ripping your sides. Like, raw, and you're like... And stuff comes out
the
side.
Oh, my God, he got, like, toothpaste? He toothpasted?
Yeah, I think so.
This guy toothpasted?
Yeah, I don't know how else.
Quote, sides?
Quote, the doctor had to stuff my intestines back in like they were rope.
Hey, don't worry about it. I wish there was a place to bathe. I'm putting a lot of fleas in here, too, just so you know. It's impossible not to. You're real gutty.
Curling them around and shoving them back
there
inside
of
me.
There we go. Just going to kind of wrap it up like a hose around this stick here and jam it back. I think once it's in there and you jump around a little, I think it'll kind of shake itself out like a duvet.
When Tom saw how the Wobblies stood up for safety, he was on board. To get out their message, the Wobblies used newspapers, posters, poems, and songs.
Okay.
They used poems and songs because many workers were illiterate. Nope.
I've got one. Shut up.
I'll give you some titles. One sociologist wrote that, quote, IWW... created the strongest form of group solidarity in the hobo world. So they were organizing just fucking dudes who got on trains and worked. Like, they were
right.
Like, let's organize everybody. They sung songs like 50,000 Lumberjacks, Arise, You Prisoners of Starvation. That's a good one. Michael Jackson covered that. Conditions, They Are Bad.
Interesting.
That one got right to it.
Yeah.
If You All Will Shut Your Trap.
Oh, man. Is this Grandpa's album? If you would shut your trap?
if you all will shut your trap.
I'm going to sing a song now. Shut the fuck up, you fucking animals.
If y'all will just shut your trap.
Tom, I feel like that's not, it's not giving us a union feel. Like a brotherhood.
If the brotherhood would shut their fucking traps, I could deliver. But I've had to write a concept album because you idiots won't shut your traps. Now everyone, shut the traps!
Another song was Parasites in This Fair Country.
Oh my God. It's so easily be talking about undergarments too.
Now John D. Rockefeller purchased a large swath of land 30 miles north of Seattle, a perfect site for shipping purposes. The Everett Land Company was organized, plotted, and the city of Everett was laid out. Okay, first of all, that's where I get my meth. So let's not talk shit about my bros. It's the worst thing anybody's ever yelled at a show. The Everett Land Company was organized. Everett's laid out. Unemployed men were then arrested and given no alternative but to clear plank and pave the streets.
Wow. Okay, so you got a job.
Yeah.
Quite a turnaround.
Over time, it was a textbook example of a company town. Rich men promoted Everett as, quote, the city of smokestacks.
Oh, God.
What a selling point.
We will remember you.
We were going to call it Fuck the Lorax, but we went with City of Smokestacks.
Well, it's taken. Problem is, it's taken.
Over 35,000 people lived in Everett in 1915. The main business activities were lumber, shingles, and shipping.
Sure.
Everyone made their money off lumber. So those in power opposed anything that would harm their rule. Even when the shipbuilding industry tried to set up in Everett, they opposed it and blocked them from coming.
Interesting.
Now, Sunset Magazine wrote an article on the shingle weavers.
Yeah, actually, I do remember Sunset Magazine's shingle weaver piece. Powerful. Powerful piece.
Such a great centerfold.
Oh, powerful piece.
Just the fingers.
No.
The funniest thing is to try to get a shingle weaver to flip you off.
Well, sir.
Is that, at sir, what point, wasn't it great that you were talking while I was making a joke?
Sir. Okay, just keep your voice down, please. It's distracting for people who came here to just see a show. All right, thank you. I understand. Just keep it down. Thank you.
It's a pretty good joke.
Hey, Dave, I think we owe you another chance.
No, come on. People heard it. They just all got
just
weird.
Just do it again. We can sitcom it. We can sitcom it for
funny post. To try to get a shingle weaver to try to flip you off because they're like, fuck.
Yeah.
I am leaving.
No.
I am leaving.
That's just so we can use it in post. It's a second take. Now we got it. It's in the can.
Quote, shingle weaving is not a trade. It is a battle. Okay. For 10 hours a day, the weaver faces two teeth steel discs whirling around 200 times a minute. The one on the left, he feeds heavy blocks of cedar, reaching over with his left hand to remove the rough shingles it rips off.
So you're just like...
He cannot stop to see what his left hand is doing.
So you're just a dead hand weaving. It is a matter of time.
His eyes are too busy examining the shingles for knot holes to be cut out by the second saw whirling in front of them.
Oh, my God.
The saw on the left sets the pace. The sawer must reach over to its teeth 50, 60 times into hungry teeth, turn the shingle, trim its edge on the saw in front of him, cut out the narrow strip containing the knot hole with two quick movements of his right hand, and toss the completed board down the chute.
What?
Hour after hour.
Oh,
sooner or later, he reaches over a little too far, and the whirling blade tosses drops of deep red into the air, and a finger, a hand, or part of an arm comes sliding down the chute.
Oh, a chute?
Hey, Bobby, that's not a shingle.
I'm sorry. Oh, my God. When I used to work on houses and I would have to cut tiles, I would, honestly, I'd resign myself to the fact that I was going to lose a thumb.
Yeah, a friend of mine
I was like, just don't be attached to both. And once you lose one, you'll never have to do it anymore.
Yeah.
I was like, it'll be fine. You'll just lose one and that'll be that.
A friend of mine cut off he was a comedian. He cut off his thumb. And I went to see him and he's like, it's fucking great, man. I get workman's comp and I can get a writing sample. And then he got hired on The Daily Show. Nothing's changed, is what I'm saying. Shingle weavers were known for their mutilated hands. This made them very hard men. The Everett Shingle Weavers formed a union in 1901, and in 1914, 1915, a depression hit. In the spring of 1915, a notice was posted stating wages would be cut. The Everett Shingle Weavers went out on strike. Scabs were brought in, as were gunmen, and violence followed. Courts made injunctions against the strikers, and the strike failed, and wages were reduced. But they made an agreement before they went back to work with the owners.
They get more fingers.
They get more fingers.
We want two more fingers each.
They each got a pig knuckle to put where a thumb had been.
I'll take it. We got pig knuckles, boys.
Three cheers for pig knuckles. So they made an agreement with the owners when they went back that if the price of shingles rose, their wages would go up.
Okay, good. Well, surely everyone will hold to that.
When has the owner of a factory or a mill not held up his part of the
bargain? Handshake agreement.
In the spring of 1916, the prices of shingles shot up.
There we go. That's good news for these pig-knuckled workers.
The owners did not raise wages.
Okay, I'm not sure why, but they shot.
Delegates demanded a raise by May 1st. Most of the owners gave in, but not the owners in Everett. And another strike was on, and more scabs poured in. Strikers were arrested and thrown in prison on any charge. And on August 19th, the picketers were attacked by the owner's henchmen, beaten with brass knuckles and blackjack, stomped by boots, and kicked in the face.
I'm not high-fiving you.
The police watched and did nothing. That night, the picketers and a bunch of Everett citizens returned the favor, attacking the henchmen. This time, the police rushed in with guns and just started beating people.
Whoa, what are you guys doing?
Hey, hold on. It's a one-way street.
Leave the henchmen alone. You jaywalked.
You don't fuck with our henchmen. As all this was going on, the Wobblies were trying to organize lumber workers in Seattle. An organizer was sent to surrounding areas to check out the situation. James Rowan was chosen, and on August 31st, he made his way to Everett. When he arrived, he came with a box, and he put it down 50 feet back from the street, following regulations, to start making a speech. The local sheriff, Donald McRae, was nearby in his car. He was drunk.
Okay, wait. Can we time out for just a quick second?
Uh-huh.
So the law was that you could stand on your box anywhere?
You can stand 50 feet back from the street. You can't stand on the street.
Just if you laid a box down, then you could just...
Then you can start talking. You bring your box.
Okay.
It's box talk.
Box talk, yeah. Okay, so just get on your soapbox. So that's what...
soapbox.
Yeah, I know, but you just... It sounds competitive. Sounds like I'm finally understand the rationale behind permits.
Yeah. Otherwise, you just got guys on boxes everywhere talking.
Yeah, just like, oh, I'm going to fuck with this guy's box speech. Stop following me with your box. No, fuck you. Stupid law.
So, Sheriff McRae offered to arrest Rowan if the local AFL union guy wanted him to, because union guys hate Wobblies.
And the drunk AFL cop. Guys.
The drunk cop, right. Yeah.
Copy that.
The AFL guy said, no, he hasn't done anything to deserve arrest. So the sheriff went up and grabbed Rowan and took him to jail.
Sure. For disagreeing with an officer, which is illegal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was released an hour later and went straight back to his box to resume his speech. And then he was arrested again.
Okay.
He was charged with peddling without a license, denied a trial, refused postponement, and sentenced to 30 days. Or he could leave town.
Huh.
So he left town.
Wow. Okay.
And he went to check out other towns because that was what he was doing. So another wobbly came the next day and opened an office in Everett. And he started selling literature. He was trying to get a prominent wobbly lecturer to come up and speak. Sheriff McRae, super not into it.
Was he drunk?
He stormed into the wobbly office and yelled, quote, "That man won't be allowed to speak in Everett. I order you out of this town. Get out by afternoon or you're all going to jail." McRae was drunk.
Okay. Good, 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 good.
After he went...
Does he know he's a cop? Is he just on a blue out where he's just drunk and doesn't know he's a cop when he's drunk? I blewed out again. I think I arrested a bunch of guys for handing out pamphlets. I got so hammered I was a cop again. He just wakes up in the uniform like, oh no. Not again. What did I do?
Hey, Jimmy, was I with you last night?
No, well, I mean, for a little bit, but then you said you were going to go have one nightcap, and then you rolled.
Fuck. How many guys did I arrest?
A lot of guys.
Fuck.
A lot of guys left town, too, because you gave them that weird option you came up with.
God damn it.
Yeah, super crazy drunk option that you...
Did I tell you I did that to my dentist?
Yeah. It's totally nuts.
I got to stop drinking.
Yeah.
Or I got to drink more. I'm not sure.
I just think I would just get rid of the cop uniform.
I look so good in it.
20th Century Fox presents. Oh, no.
After McRae had stormed into the office, the IWW office, he went to a pool hall and just started grabbing random workers.
Yo!
Guys who didn't have families, and then just... made him get on a train and leave.
What?
He just deported a bunch of guys. Just
get the fuck out of here.
Some guy opened an office. Get out!
The wobbly organizer closed the office and went to Seattle to discuss what to do next. About 20 wobblies then headed from Seattle to Everett with Speaker James Thompson. Upon arriving, Thompson began to speak on a street platform. 15 police arrived and told him to come to the police station, so he went. And then Rowan got up and started speaking, and he was arrested. And then a female wobbly started speaking, and she was arrested. And as was the next, in order, one by one, they were all arrested, all 20, and then marched off. But as they were marching, Rowan somehow slipped away and ran off. So then the locals started getting up and speaking, and they were getting arrested one by one.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah. Hey, why not?
I don't know.
At the
jail. They seem cool.
At the jail, Police Chief Kelly told Thompson he didn't want to lock him up. And Thompson responded, "That's interesting. Why have you got me here?" The police chief Kelly said it was a delicate time and they didn't want him to speak now. Another time would be great.
Okay.
Thompson asked the chief if he believed in free speech, and the chief said he did. Thompson then asked if he was under arrest, and the chief said no. And Thompson said, quote, "Come to the meeting then, because I'm going to go speak."
The cop's like, "Ew.
This is like a puzzle."
Sometimes I wish I wasn't drunk for these. Oh, yeah.
This isn't the drunk guy. Yeah, this is the police chief. So now Rowan had gone back to the platform after he ran off, and he was speaking for 30 minutes before the cops realized what he was doing.
He probably ran out of steam. He was like, "I didn't think I'd get this far."
Then a drunk Sheriff McRae came and took Rowan to the county jail and locked him up.
"You're arrest under."
No formal charges were made against anyone. The next morning, the wobblies were all deported on a train.
Okay, what? All right.
Well, he put some on a boat, but he made them pay for the boat trip.
Well, I mean, as he should, it's a vacation.
The next day, another wobbly organizer arrived and opened the Everett office again.
And then man, he's just like, okay.
Jesus Christ, they just they keep fucking coming. They're like Borg. A lot of you didn't get that. You fucking have blown it by not watching Star Trek. So the guy opens up the office again, and then Sheriff McRae bursts in and yells, quote, "You goddamn son of a bitch, are you back here again? Get on your coat and get into that car." Sheriff McRae was
drunk.
Wait,
he said get your coat on?
Yeah.
Get your coat on. You might catch it's a little chilly out there. Oh, I don't want you to catch a cold. I'm mad, but I'm not. I don't hate you.
Drunk cop! He deported the wobbly by train.
All right. Well, you know the drill. Ship or train? Would you like to leave on a ship or a train?
The next day, another wobbly arrived on the train, but he was met by Sheriff McRae at the depot.
It's weird that a wasted cop is against wobbling. I hate wobbly.
So another one arrives on the train. Sheriff McRae is at the depot. He's drunk.
I mean, I'm down for you to keep saying it, but I'm just going to assume he's drunk unless you tell me he's not.
I'm just reporting it like it was reported.
So that's how they're reporting? They're just like, yeah. And he was also drunk.
The Wobblies were like, he was fucking always drunk. McRae took the Wobbly was put back on the train to Seattle, and then another Wobbly came 2 days later, opened the Everett office, and managed to keep it open for 2 days. And three speakers came and spoke, and Rowan was released from prison after 8 days, and he went straight to the street and started speaking. No arrests were made at this time because a federal mediator had been sent by the U.S. Commissioner of Labor to oversee the situation in Everett.
Okay.
Now, the City of Everett Commercial Club took this time to meet. It was the inner circle of lumber owner control, and they came up with a plan.
Oh, did they? What is that, take the sun's power? Simple plan.
That night, a huge meeting of scabs, gunmen, and others were held. They dismissed a meeting with the federal mediator to hammer out a settlement and said there would be no settlement. A mill owner asked Sheriff McRae if he could handle the situation from here on out. And McRae said yes, but he needed more deputies. Quote, swear in the members of the commercial club then. 200 men volunteered to be deputies and were sworn in.
Oh, my God.
Be fine.
Yeah, that is totally going to be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
What could go wrong?
Just, you know, no training of any.
And McRae kept swearing men in. Soon there were hundreds of deputies in Everett. And they were divided into divisions, each with a duty. One to keep an eye out for wobblies on trains, another to watch boats, another division for deporting them, and another for just beating them up.
So wait. Surely some of these deputies thought they were like, all right, yeah, I've always wanted to be a cop. Sure, I'll do it. All right, so it's basically four things we need you to do. Either get the wobblies on a train, get them on a ship, watch for them, or beat the shit out of them. Yes, in the back.
I want to beat him up. I like beating up guys.
You're in the right place. You're going to be beating them up. Yeah. Guys, if any of them gets on a soapbox, take the box and then beat the shit out of them. Okay? Now, again, it really, it's like getting rid of a stain, except it's a person. Okay? You identify that there is a stain. You take action, and then you put it on a train. Yes, in the back again.
I heard if you hit them, they weeble and they wobble, but they don't fall down.
It is true their base is made of sand. Also, I'm shit-faced. I should,
Weird. I'm
blackout
shit-faced.
Drunk.
I'm shit-faced.
That's fine to do here, guys. I don't remember these interactions. Like the memento guy.
Memento?
I feel like my breath's fine. I don't want one, thank you.
curious.
Now, some lawyers at this took this time to drop out of the commercial club. Their names were then listed on the bulletin board to boycott. People were forced to now choose between the two sides. Businesses who did not have mortgages or weren't dependent on lumber owners put up signs that read, "We are not members of the commercial club." While the commercial club used their money to buy blackjacks, leaded clubs, guns, ammunition, hire detectives, labor spies, and, quote, agents provocateur.
Good. Good, good, good. And what's the last one?
Agents provocateur? I think that's a...
cologne. Is it not? It's definitely a fragrance.
I thought it was like a lingerie. Isn't it like a lingerie store in L.A.?
What is it called?
Is it a lingerie store? Fuck yeah, it is.
All right.
Or a cologne, weirdo. So anyway, I guess they brought in a bunch of people who sold lingerie.
Yeah. And I know all the big lingerie stores in L.A., to be fair. All of them.
It's where I eat my lunch.
Yeah. Morning, Kathy.
Gareth.
How are you? All right.
So
you just sit in like one of the racks, like when you were a kid and you'd hide. All right. I'm just going to go eat a crustless PB&J inside of that rack. Thank you. Whew, I must have nodded off. Are you guys closing up? I am wiped.
I just would love it for there to be a guy that lived in a lingerie store.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When they don't know, we think a guy lives here. He's very good.
So where are we?
Seattle.
Right.
Nice try.
So the federal mediator leaves. He's like, I can't do anything.
Yeah, he's
like,
I'm deporting myself.
Yeah, you guys are all fucked. I gotta get out of here. The next day, union speakers were again being arrested, but now they were being severely beaten and held in the jail. Wobbly was sent from Seattle to hire a lawyer to get the prisoners out, and he was arrested and driven to a desolate country road by McRae and told to walk to Seattle.
Okay, so things are changing.
Yeah, now they're walking.
Now it's walking. I was told there'd be a train or a ship. No. No more luxury. Walk. Give me your shoes. Dude, walk on your hands.
Sheriff McRae then kicked him in the nuts.
Interesting.
Walk, now walk, motherfucker.
Yeah. And you're going to have a tummy ache. Let's get out of here, boys.
The Wobbly, quote, developed a severe rupture.
Oh, Jesus.
Show's over. Show's over.
Thanks for coming out, guys. Severe rupture. It's going to be hard to walk.
He did, though. He walked his
My ball popped. Go.
He went to Seattle and explained what happened.
I want to be a deputy.
And then turned around and went straight back to Everett. Because these guys are fucking badass beyond words. Wobblies are fucking badass. A group of Wobblies took a train to a town 4 miles north of Everett, because they're going to do a sneaky end around, and then they got on a ship named the Wanderer. So they're going to come in from the tippity top and whoop.
Sure, you're not the captain of the vessel, right? That sounds a little vague.
I'm a ship expert.
I'm going to go around the tippity top and go whoop, and then we're there. Then it's luggage and dinner, guys.
Gentlemen, I got a plan. We're going to skippity-doo-doo front down from the tippity-toppity.
And hopefully we don't run into any... All right, let's move. Oh, boy, you seeing what I'm seeing? Dun-dun. We got one.
When they were a mile away from Everett, they saw the tugboat Edison coming towards them.
Hello.
On board...
We're fancy.
On board was Sheriff McRae and 6 deputies.
Oh, no.
And when they were 200 yards away, they just started shooting.
Oh, shit.
The captain said a bullet just missed his head. McRae yelled at the captain, quote, "You son of a bitch, you come over here."
All right, take that, bullets.
The captain yelled back, "You come over here."
Hold on, let me see if I can.
He said to go over there. I don't know what he's saying.
I don't, I'm not.
What do you guys have over there to eat?
Butter. That's how you tell who was here in the first show. First show was about butter.
So if you didn't come to the first show, that's your fault. So that's what you missed, a butter callback.
So the Edison pulled up alongside, and McRae took them all off the boat, and he pistol whipped the captain and then kicked him in the nuts. Sheriff McRae was drunk. He said the captain was bringing people into Everett to riot, and the captain said he was a union man, and McRae yelled, quote, "You shut your damn head, or I will..."
Shut your damn head? What?
He's drunk.
Shut your head.
He doesn't know how mouths work. He's
the goddamn thing in your head! Well, shut it!
He's just sick. He's also probably just... At this point, he's told them to shut their mouths so many times that he's like, "That's not working. Shut your whole head!" Said, "Shut your trap, shut the head.
You shut your damn head or I will knock it clean off.
Shut your head or I'll knock your head off."
This guy doesn't know how heads work.
"I'm gonna eat your head. Stop saying things."
McRae then went about beating the Wobblies with his pistol and took all 21 to the Everett jail. No charges were filed. The Wobblies were beaten again in jail. One young Wobbly was repeatedly asked, quote, "Are you an IWW?" And each time he said yes, he was smashed against the steel walls. He was a mess, but he would not stop saying he was a Wobbly.
Yeah, all right.
There were no bunks, no blankets, and they slept on the bare, cold floor.
Or what lumberjacks called luxury.
"I slept on a bed made out of skin."
What?
"Fleas carried me out once."
Have you ever seen a cartoon?
I was one. That's they were singing like flea songs. Shut up.
So then Rowan came back to Everett, and he was arrested as he got off the train. There were now 40 Wobblies being held in Everett without charges, and they were beaten daily. McRae then took Rowan out to the country, and on his way, he told Rowan he was not happy because Rowan had been telling the citizens of Everett that the jail was lousy.
Oh, wow. I mean, you hurt my feelings. You know that?
I was fine with all this stuff till you said the jail stunk.
You know how hard it is to maintain a jail?
McRae was drunk. McRae drove to a country road and told Rowan to walk back to Seattle. No beating. Surprised, he started walking, but only made it 75 yards when a dozen men wearing handkerchiefs over their faces attacked him.
Oh, boy.
They beat him with clubs and the butts of their guns and put a bag over his head. That's never...
Not good. When you get a bag over head?
Bag over your head.
You got a bag feeling about this one. Mm. Yeah.
They held him down over a log, stripped his shirt off, and hit him with a whip over 50 times. Mm. Then they let him go. "Have a good walk."
I don't know if you call that letting go. I think that's then they stopped.
He walked to Seattle. How fucking far is... Like, is it like a day's walk that we're talking about?
3 days.
Right, so he walks back to Seattle where he's like, fucking check this shit out, and starts showing it off, and they take pictures, and then they just distribute the photo fucking everyone in Seattle.
Oh, boy.
Now, the plan to scare off the union fires had backfired. Now more Seattle union men decided to head to Everett.
Yeah.
And the free...
It's a lot of boxes.
Seattle's out of boxes.
Yeah.
The Seattle Free Speech Committee came to Everett. The first Wobbly stood on a box at 7:30 p.m. on a Monday. 3,000 people gathered. He spoke for 35 minutes, and then 150 deputies arrived, and the speaker was arrested. As soon as he was taken, another wobbly got up in the box and started speaking. He told the now angry crowd to calm down, and then he was pulled off the box, clubbed, and taken away. Both men were taken to the jail steps by a drunk deputy, where a group of 50 deputies beat them. One yelled, quote, "Do anything, but don't kill him." That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's like, I'd be like, can you give us a focus?
So there's wiggle room. Just don't let him die.
One of the wobblies...
Can we paint him? No. No. No.
Can I put a rainbow on... A rainbow on him? Like a paint, him, paint a rainbow on
no,
him?
No, beat them. Beat them. Sorry. Beat them.
Well, now it's a bummer, because now you're like... you were like open,
we
wide,
wanted to paint
whatever,
him.
And now you're like...
I was going to really, be best friends with like one that. Of the guys. All right, we'll kill him. No, don't kill
no!
him. Do not kill them.
So they beat him. One guy got away, and they chased him in a car and then beat him unconscious. It's going to get worse.
Oh, what?
Back at the meeting, another wobbly got on the bus, opened the box, whatever, and started speaking. Quote, "Fellow comrades," and he was hit. Anyone who got on the box now was beaten. The deputies all put on white bandanas around their necks so they could tell each other apart. And then they started going wild, clubbing men, women, and even hitting an 8-year-old girl in the head. But to be fair, she's fucking 8 at this point, so she's basically like a 40-year-old dude now. What just happened?
Your aunt's here.
I think someone was like, "You can't call an 8-year-old girl a man." Oh, comedy's fun. So, someone saw McCrae kick an 8-year-old boy who was in his path. McCrae was said to be drunk.
Yes, okay.
A deputy beat up the music school teacher.
No more teaching brass. What? Hit his cymbals.
Miss Louise McGuire was knocked into the gutter. A union man who was brought into the jail was beaten bloody on the steps by a man named Ryan, who had previously been fired from the department for drinking, but now was a deputy again.
Yeah, uh-huh. That's quite a turnaround.
He was drunk.
Yeah. McCrae, and the cool thing is I can be drunk now. It's like encouraged.
McCrae arrived at the jail and told the wobbly he could leave, but to... not go out the front door because, quote, "If you go out there, they'll kill you." So McCrae had him go out the back door.
Uh-oh.
And the wobbly said, quote, "And I seen, I guess, 150 or maybe 200. I didn't have the time to count them right out the back of the jail, lined up in lines on either side, and I had to run between them and come out the other end. They banged me on the head with clubs and all over. I looked bad and felt worse. I had blue marks on my shoulders and on my hips and on my knees. Several wobblies had to run the gauntlet. Witnesses said Officer Daniels would shoot at them as they ran away. But he was drunk, so he missed with every shot."
Good.
This is a gauntlet. Who does a gauntlet?
Oh, that's insane. Yeah, I mean, that's... Yeah,
the lumber companies had passed a law preventing people from speaking on this specific corner that the wobblies kept speaking on.
Well, that's very specific.
Take that, motherfucker! Where are you going to go now? The I guess what do you call it? Kitty corner? You call it kitty corner? We're going to go over there. So,
okay.
It was a good try.
Shit.
So on September 20th, a meeting was held in the public park. Between 10 and 15,000 people showed up this time.
Wow.
They listened to wobbly socialist union leaders and other citizens. The commercial club and McCrae did absolutely nothing. Instead, the sheriff turned his attention to workers on the outskirts of town who were passing through.
Wait.
Yeah, now he's just like, fuck it, let's just go beat up some... Now it's like they're just hunting. They're going to go, let's go get some workers. Or...
They're organized. Let's find another bunch of weirdos. Come on, we got a good buzz going. Let's get some people on ships.
Migrating workers were pulled off trains, beaten, robbed, and made to leave. They started calling beating the travel migrants, quote, slugging parties.
Oh, what the fuck? Jesus Christ.
Everett's actually worse now.
Some aren't laughing.
No, there's some people who are like, I live in Everett. And you're like, whoa. What? Sorry, how many people live in Everett? I'm glad you're alive. The slugging parties were attended by the top citizens of Everett. The mayor?
Oh, hello. Hold my monocle.
An ex-governor of Minnesota who had moved here?
Jesse Ventura.
A military captain, bankers, and other pillars of the community.
Oh, what? I mean, oh, my God. You can just imagine. Come on, we're going to go beat them. We're allowed. We're rich.
This is fun. We have money. We get to beat the poor. This only, for some reason, increased membership in the Wobblies.
Weird.
Yeah, it's weird how that worked.
Mm.
On August 30th, 41 Wobblies took a boat to Everett. They were met at the dock by a couple hundred drunk deputies wearing white bandanas.
I mean, are they... calling them deputies seems a little much at this point. Like, they're like... I mean, they're just wearing white bandanas.
No, it's like a bunch of my dad.
And they're shit-face, yeah.
Yeah. It's like my dad in ascots.
Yeah. We're a gang. Oh, boy.
Some of the deputies were so drunk they could barely stand up.
Oh, that won't be a problem.
When the Wobblies got off the ship, they were clubbed with gun butts and batons. McCrae bloodied a man's face. One drunk deputy hit a man, and McCrae joined in. They kept beating him until their fellow deputies started screaming and pointed out they were beating another deputy.
Take that, Wobbly. That's Chad. Oh, shit. Chad. I thought you was a Wobbly.
He's Wobbly now.
Chad is now a Wobbly. Oh, man.
Well, Chad, good luck with poverty.
Here you go, Chad. It's a pine cone.
The Wobblies were loaded onto trucks, taken to a country road, and made to run a gauntlet. I fucking love the gauntlets.
It is amazing to listen to, like, the tactical shifts in ways to suppress. Like, get out, all right? Now you got to go through the spanking machine. Like, just like, what will make you stop?
Okay, ready?
Oh, no.
A quarter mile away at the Ketchum House... Oh. The family heard the cries of the wounded men. The Ketchum brothers decided to investigate. Quote, the deputies were formed in two lines. A man would be taken out of a car, and two deputies would join his arms up behind him, meanwhile hammering his unprotected face from both sides as hard as they could with their fists. Then the man was started down the line, deputies striking with clubs and other weapons and kicking the prisoner as he progressed. Just before reaching the cattle guard, he was made to run. In crossing the blades, the three men on the east side of the track would swing their clubs upon his back while the men on the west clubbed him across the face. This was repeated with the men as fast as they were dragged from the autos. They also heard the sound of blows and the cries of, quote, oh my God, Doc, don't hit me again, Doc. Because one of them was a doctor.
Stethoscope gave him away.
Like, that feels like it's against with the Hippocratic Oath. You're not supposed to be part of a gauntlet.
I don't think that specific language is in there, though. Or it wasn't. Boy, that's crazy.
Lou Ketchum took a deputy by the coattails and asked, what are you doing? What is going on here? The deputy replied, we're beating up 41 YWWs. The super drunk deputy, who had beaten one of his own with McCrae, shouted, quote, let's burn them!
Oh, boy.
That guy's really drunk.
Yeah, hopefully.
Others started screaming, let's hang him. McCrae then said, quote,
so it's like the Pee Wee tequila bar.
I don't know what that is.
I say we let him go.
Might be a deep cut.
McCrea then said, quote, if you fellows come back, some of you will die, and that's all there is to it. All the men had severe wounds. The sight was so gruesome, one of the deputies threw up.
Oh, fuck, I can't believe I did that.
Yeah, I mean...
You should see your face.
Also, all that alcohol in the mix isn't going to help.
Yeah. The injured men pooled their money together and put the eight most seriously injured on a train. The rest walked. One of the Wobblies said McCrea told him if he returned, he'd fill him up with holes. The Wobbly said he had a right to free speech, and McCrea responded, quote, to hell with free speech and the Constitution. You're now in Snohomish?
Good night, everybody.
So proud.
You're now in Snohomish County, and we are running the country.
Whoa. Bold.
I mean, he took it wide.
Bold.
He opened it up.
Yeah. Could have started with state.
Yep.
Went big, though. Went all the way. Running the world. You in here? Yeah. We conquered Europe last night. Stupid assholes.
You fuck yourself.
Yeah.
The next day, the Ketchum brothers saw some of the deputies worried and looking around the grounds. They went up in the... And the deputies asked if any of the Wobblies had been found, you know, lying around. And the Ketchum brothers said no, they had not killed anyone. The grass was soaked with blood, and there were blood-soaked hats.
Obviously.
Word of the attack was out in Everett. Deputies lost friends overnight. A mass meeting was called. Local church leaders joined in. November 5th was set. It would be on a Sunday. Word went out all over the Northwest for Wobblies to come. The commercial club responded to the meeting by doubling down. Blackjacks, revolvers, and high-powered rifles were gathered. It feels like commercial club's a little light for what they should be called.
No, not at all.
More deputies took the oath. 2 days before the meeting...
You're just rushing them in. Let's go. Put your hand on it. Do you? Go. Yeah. Do you? Go. Yeah. Hand on it. Do you? Move. Let's go.
Hey, I'm drunk.
Yes, go. Yeah, great. Go, go, go. Guys, don't even put your hand on it anymore. Move, 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 move.
2 days before the meeting, McCrea stormed into the Wobblies Hall in Everett. He was drunk. One of them asked if he believed in unions, and McCrea said, quote...
What?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course I do.
Yeah, obviously.
Yes, I belonged to the shingle weavers at one time.
Oh.
But when the shingle weavers went out on strike, I donated $25 to the strike fund, and they gave me a rotten deal and sent the check back to me. But that's good. That's not...
His little heart was hurt.
Yes.
His little heart, he wanted...
His heart was hurt, and now he says to hell with shingle weavers and the rest of the union.
Ah, the little baby boy, he just... Oh, I mean, I know he's been a violent drunk pig.
We found what happened to the little fella.
Yeah, no, yeah. Like, a shrink would just be like, oh, right there, boom. Okay, yeah. That's say no more. That's why you're the worst, right there. You're the worst because of that.
The Wobblies hired a passenger ship for the trip to the meeting. 250 boarded. They sang songs as they crossed the sound. At 1 p.m. in Everett, the mill whistles blew. Out poured deputies and scabs armed with clubs, revolvers, rifles, and shotguns. Everett citizens were removed from the dock. Men were waiting armed with guns on the tugboat Edison and lined up in warehouses. McCrea and a National Guard lieutenant were in charge. Sacks of potatoes were used as barricades.
Sure, obviously. Well, I mean, why not? Yeah, that makes...
Mm-hmm. As the ship pulled up to the city dock, McCrea yelled, quote, who is your leader? And everyone on the boat yelled back, we are all leaders. It's a normal Wobbly response. Yeah. That was one of their things.
Oh, great. They had a rehearsal. Damn it. We didn't rehearse anything.
Are you fuckers going to dance?
Hey, when if they ask who our leader is, I'll say me, okay? Well, just to be clear. I don't want to confuse them.
So they yell, we are all leaders. McCrae pulled his gun and said they could not land. And Iwobbly yelled back, to the hell we can't.
Okay.
And then the shooting started. Hugo Gerlow had climbed the ship's flagpole to wave at people as the boat came in. He fell lifeless to the deck. Oscar Carlson threw himself on the deck where he was shot several times. Ed Roth took a bullet to the abdomen and collapsed. All the Wobblies then ran to the other side of the ship, which almost capsized it. The only thing that kept it from capsizing was the rope that was tied up.
Wow.
People lost their footing due to the blood on the deck and fell overboard.
That's a lot of blood.
The deputies shot at them as they swam. Those men were all shot except for one. The water turned red. Joe Galanzo was shot in the hip, back, and knee. Harry Parker was shot in his back. Felix Barron took a bullet to the stomach. All the Wobblies were now laying on the deck, and the deputies were just firing away. The scabs on the tugboat Verona started shooting. The National Guard lieutenant fell dead, shot by one of his own. One deputy pointed his gun around the corner of a building and without being able to see, just emptied it.
Jesus.
He hit the very drunk deputy Beard, who died.
I mean,
yeah, that one, I'm fine with that one.
Yeah.
McCrae fell to his knees after being hit in the steel jacket he was wearing.
My jacket! It's hit!
He yelled out, quote, ooh, I'm hit! I'm hit! I'm hit! Ooh!
What is he, the doughboy? No.
In one warehouse, the drunk deputies started going crazy, shooting and running around in all directions. There were bullet holes in the floor and high up on the wall. One deputy ran out yelling, quote, they've gone crazy in there. They're shooting every which way. They shot me in the ear.
Yeah, they've gone crazy. Yeah. Why?
On the ship, John Looney was killed by a bullet as he lay on the deck. A piece of wood shattered by a bullet pierced one of his eyes. The owner of a non-union plumbing business stood repeatedly shooting a shotgun at the Wobblies on the deck. They were now piled four or five deep. 10 deputies just stood and fired shot after shot into them. One young Wobbly, covered in blood from several wounds, jumped up and said, my God, I can't take this any longer, and leapt over the side of the boat, sunk, and was never seen again. This was all being watched by the townspeople up on a hillside.
Oh, boy.
Men were vomiting. Women came rushing down to try to stop the murder, but were stopped. So were the men who tried to launch rescue boats. The shooting continued. Abraham Rabinowitz tried to stand. A bullet tore off the back of his head. Gus Johnson, knowing he was mortally wounded, finished singing the Union song they had been singing when they pulled up. How about that fucking guy?
Yeah.
That's impressive. Yeah. He yelled at his fellow Wobblies to cheer when he was done. Yeah.
Wow. And
I'm not. I gotta be honest, Jimmy. I'm not feeling it right now.
What I said. I said way to go. I mean, I think that's unbelievable. I said way to
I'm
go.
I'm feeling. I'm a little bit bummed out.
Well, like, I'm an underreactor. I told you that. I'm not somebody who freaks out over stuff.
Can we sing Parasites in the Country then?
Are you dying? Are you?
I'm bleeding out. I'm from 9.
Because I just saw you
10,
holding a set
oh,
list. How many are you
places.
Doing?
I'm bleeding from all these.
Okay. Wow.
Wow. There it is. A little fucking spirit.
I think it's amazing. I really do.
Oh, God, the back of my head.
Yeah.
The shooting went on for 10 minutes.
Jesus.
The Verona finally managed to pull away. Deputies fired again and again as long as the boat was within range. Harry Golden was the last hit in the leg, which was later amputated. And then the Verona headed back to Seattle. How was the trip, guys?
Well,
the journey was 2.5 hours back. Clothes were torn off those who were not hurt to help the wounded, and the few men who were armed threw their guns overboard.
Interesting.
In Seattle, the police were waiting for them. 4 dead were taken off first, then the 31 wounded were taken to the hospital. Those who were not injured were arrested. Everyone's like, what?
You know,
like,
yeah.
That, yeah, have you guys not heard of America? Yeah. So Felix Barron died of his wounds at the hospital. No one knows how many were lost in the water. The 5 whose bodies had been recovered were Felix Barron, Hugo Merlot, Gustav Johnson, John Looney, Abraham Rabinowitz. Back in Everett, the deputies carried the bodies of the lieutenant and Deputy Beard as thousands of citizens booed, hissed, and yelled at them. 2 hours after the massacre, three wobbly men with the hugest balls of all time took to the corner and started making speeches.
Oh, my God. Oh, dude.
The fucking, I mean, just
as
insane.
McCray was just like pouring like a whiskey, it was like, well, fine. Oh, my God. They're like bed bugs. He's like, no.
The three were arrested. In jail, Mayor Merrill beat one. His hands were placed under the legs of an iron cell bed, and the mayor jumped up and down, mangling his hands.
Ah.
The mayor then smashed his head against the cement several times. 500 deputies patrolled the streets of Everett that night, worried about revenge and rioting. The violence turned out to not win the people of Everett over.
Interesting.
It is weird, right?
They don't like red water?
I don't. A reporter wrote, quote, "The temper of the people is dangerous. Nothing but curses for the commercial club was heard. Men and women who ordinarily are law-abiding were heard using the most vitriolic language and loudly sympathizing with the IWW. I heard a gray-haired woman, mothers and wives, openly hoping the Wobblies would come back and clean up."
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
The next morning, the mayor came to the shingle weavers' picket line, armed with a rifle, and told the weavers to scatter because snipers may pick them off. He said he would defend them with his life.
Wait.
Yep.
The
mayor then went on a soapbox and spoke, saying he was not responsible and it was all McCray's fault.
Oh, okay. All right. So we had a halftime. Okay. I was like, wait, what? Okay. So
it turns out he's a politician.
Right. I can't believe what he did.
The governor came. What? You're drunk. Beyond reason.
You're a deputy.
There, yeah. The governor came and met with the mill owners and officials, but not the workers. A coroner's journey quickly concluded the lieutenant and Deputy Beard had been killed by, quote, gunshot wounds inflicted by a riotous mob on the steamer Verona.
Okay.
The old boat riot.
Yeah.
Nothing more dangerous than a boat that pulls up of rioters.
Yeah. But also shows like how 100% you have to be if you're the coroner, because you'd just be like, bullets. But instead, you're like, bullets from there. They did it. Yeah, them. Those are the guys.
People who swore the first shots came from the dock were not allowed to testify. The Seattle Central Labor Council declared the inquest fraudulent. The shingle weavers returned to their jobs. They were told it was the only way to relieve the tension in the city.
Yeah, nope.
Yeah, get back, boys. Get some,
yeah, fingers off.
We won. Mm-hmm. Mayor Gill of Seattle had blankets and tobacco delivered to the men in jail. He was criticized by people in Everett for allowing the IWW to set sail. So Gill called out McCray and said the men on the dock were cowards and murderers. He said anyone going to Everett should arm themselves. In the prison in Seattle, the Wobblies were led by a hole. And a finger would come out and point at the ones who should be held. Later in court, they would learn the finger belonged to George Reese, a Wobbly. Turned out George Reese had a long history of starting fights with scabs, getting riots going, setting fires and other violence, and never, ever being arrested with his fellow Wobblies. George Reese was also on the Verona, and he was armed. 74 men were charged with first-degree murder and sent to Everett. One guy said he should be charged too, so he paid his way up to Everett and demanded to be arrested.
What? This guy...
The Wobblies are like, I'm staying together, even if it's the fucking stupidest thing ever.
It's going to cost me a lot to get to jail, but I got to do it.
Apparently it was super awkward when he showed up. They were all like, okay.
Was it stupid? Should I not have done this? I feel like I broke up the vibe. What was going on? Were you guys talking about me before I got arrested? Before I paid to get arrested? I can go.
They arrested him. IWW leader Thomas Tracy was the first to face trial. The trial lasted 2 months. Two well-known lawyers defended Tracy. Tons of testimony and evidence showed the shooting was planned by the deputies. A McRae took the stand and detailed the brutality he inflicted. It was noted that McRae was sober.
Oh, okay.
Whoa. Fucking, yeah. Whoa.
Whoa. Whoa. Who is this guy? Your Honor, I don't remember the last 10 years. Apparently, I hate unions and killed a bunch of people.
Awkward.
I'm a cop, I guess.
How long have I been a cop?
Oh, my God. I took the police test drunk.
So, McRae takes a stand and is just fucking doesn't give a shit. He's asked if he struck the captain of the Wanderer over the head with the butt of his gun, and McRae replied, quote, certainly did.
Next.
He was asked if any blood flowed, and he said, a little, not much.
No, no.
Not enough to bring any sympathy in you? Nah.
What's for lunch?
It turns out I'm worse sober.
I'm picturing a little Joe Pesci character up there. Now, yeah.
In court, George Reese was proven to have been employed by the Pinkerton Agency. They're good guys, Pinkertons. All the deaths and injuries of the deputies were determined to have been from friendly fire. Thomas Tracy was acquitted in May 1917.
Friendly fire? That's very...
The deputies.
Yeah, I understand, but, like, you're... Normally, it just seems like it's really hard to miscommunicate in that situation that much to be killing that many of your own men.
Well, they just killed two.
Yeah, but still, to be like, to not know enough... Friendly fire to me is normally like, oh, we thought you were someone else. They're like right next to each other, just firing at each other.
Well, they were drunk.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And so, I don't even think you'd call that friendly fire.
No, it should be called drunk fire. Drunk fire,
yeah. That's just drunk fire.
Your Honor, we have concluded that the deputies were fucking shit-faced. So.
Guilty.
So he's acquitted. The publicity from the trial made the public sympathetic hugely to the Wobblies. And after Tracy's trial, none of the others were brought to trial. The IWW officially listed... 5 dead with 27 wounded, although it's speculated that as many as 12 Wobblies were killed. The Wobblies would gain in strength of the Union and then slowly be crushed. World War I and other things did them in. That's obviously a tale for another time. But, that's what happened in Everett. So
we'll get back there.
How many of you work for Amazon? How many work in an Amazon warehouse? One. The reason there's not a lot of people from an Amazon warehouse is because they're like the fucking city of Everett in 1915 in the warehouses. And they can't afford anything. Most of them are on food stamps, and they work for Jeff Bezos, who makes as much money as they would make in their life in a second. So this is coming again. It just is. It can't be any other way, because these guys are such fucking scumbags and making so much money and crushing people's lives. This is coming again. And wouldn't it be great if the Amazon guys all joined up with the fucking IWW? Anyway.
Well, it's good to have something to look forward to then. No, but even when you're reading that, like, it just doesn't seem that crazy.
Right. They literally slaughtered men because of a little bit of money. Like, that's what it comes down to. It's just a little bit of money they wanted to make. They didn't want to give a little bit of a raise, so they just slaughtered people. Anyway, enjoy your country. I think it's going great.
got a good feeling.
Got a good feeling.
At least we don't have a gun problem.
We have a gun solution. Thank you, everybody, for coming out. We appreciate it very much, truly. Thank you, guys. Love you, mean it.
Do you have anything to say? Nothing to say, right?
No, I think...